Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, and I'm your host, Kate Scuffle. Tonight, we're welcoming a very special guest to the show and to the Lehigh Valley. Mark Fitzgerald Wilson is the new executive director at Zollner Arts Center at Lehigh University. Coming to Zollner as the center moves into its 25th year and navigates reopening during these unprecedented times. Welcome, Mark. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you here. In fact, I have to ask, what is it about the position at Zollner that would attract a successful educator, performer, and arts administrator like yourself to take on a role like this in the midst of a pandemic and all the uncertainty that comes with that? I mean, what excited you about the job?
Well, honestly, Lehigh University is one of the top 50 research institutions in the country. And the beauty of the Lehigh Valley, of spending my time here, going whitewater rafting, watching my son play lacrosse games at the athletic fields at Lehigh University over the past few years, were things that made me feel familiar with this area. And then I knew of the great artistic work that Deb Zacharakis did over the past few years here for Lehigh University. And I knew that the quality that she did was something that was very attractive to know that this is what the community itself loved to see.
And is there an upside, perhaps, to arriving during such unusual times? I mean, it must be a little quieter than it might have been to come into right now.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm doing right now, especially with the staff and the community, gives me an opportunity to really, speak and slow down a little bit and listen to folks about what makes the Zollner Arts Center special. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been asking the staff a lot also. And we're sitting down and talking about what our goals are and what are things that we are doing now that we want to continue. What are things that we can look at changing? Are there things that we want to be innovative in the future? And so I think it gives us the opportunity to really reevaluate our position in the world and in the world of the performing arts.
I was going to say, I think if there's any group of people that are up to using a big pause like this, it would be the creative community to reimagine some possibilities. And you yourself, and you've got a fascinating, I find, a fascinating background. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey in the arts, and then maybe perhaps your work most recently with the Grunin Center for the Arts in New Jersey?
Sure. So I received my undergraduate degree at a small liberal arts school in Iowa, Simpson College in Indianola, Iowa. And my first job was as a middle school music teacher in Des Moines, Iowa. I then went off to grad school at the University of Houston, and I studied more opera there. And after I was done, I ended up performing some musical theater and also opera around the United States and also in Germany. So my passion as a performer and the things I saw as a performer working with some great venues and great opera companies, it gave me that opportunity to see the things I loved. The companies I love, how they worked, and I saw things I didn't like. Mm-hmm. So I knew that in a job like this, working as an administrator, the things that I knew that were great and top notch are things I wanted to, continue to bring that everywhere I went. So I ended up back in 2013 being hired at Ocean County College to be a professor in music, and I was helping create the performing arts degree in music there. While I was there, the first semester I spent writing about six or seven classes in music. And the vice president of academic affairs, she looked at me one day and said, "You have an administrator brain. I want you to be an administrator." And I'm like, okay. And she wanted me to help out with the Performing Arts Center. So we received a large gift from the Grunin Foundation. It was the largest gift to a community college at the time, $5.75 million. And part of that was to revitalize the Jersey Shore after Superstorm Sandy. Mm. And so the Grunin Foundation has the belief that great education and great performing arts and a great healthcare, all those three things working together can be an economic driver for a community. And so that was their vision about how to revitalize the shore, and the performing arts was a key role of that, because when you have parents who want to move to an area, they want to have those great schools, but they also want to go out to have that great entertainment. They want to see world-class artists. And so that's the vision that they had, and so that's what I helped build at the Jersey Shore during that time frame when I was there. And then I was also able to work at the Novens Planetarium at Ocean County College during my last 3 years. And what we did there was actually learn how to connect both the arts and technology together. The how do we see the arts as an incubator in this new digital world? Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of how we started to really connect technology and the arts. We did lots of programs together, and we were able to really think more creatively. Like one program that we did, we brought in this composer and piano player named Roman Zavada from Montreal. And he went up to Northern Canada, and he filmed the Northern Lights with a group of people. And he took an upright piano, and he camped out under the stars with this piano. And then he would look at the Northern Lights, and he would compose music. And so what he ended up doing after he did all that, they wanted a place for him to try this as a performance. And so the director of cultural services for the Quebec government of New York City, who was a friend of mine, reached out and said, you know, I know you're very creative. I know you like to see creative things. Would this be something of interest to you? And so it was. And so we brought Roman, and we played his full dome film of the Northern Lights in our planetarium. And then he came with a keyboard, and he then performed live in a planetarium.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so those are the kind of things that we thought were great, that connection of the performing arts and technology.
Hmm. And is that the kind of vision, that nice mix of technology, the community, the arts? I'm sure that informs your vision coming to Zoner as well.
It does. And one of the things I really want to do here is really connect with the community. I would say that's one of the things I was very proud of, what I did at Ocean County College and at the Grundin Center, was able to connect with the students on our campus and then connect with our community and then find ways to bring the students and the community together and together through dialogue. And that's the thing I want to do here, because I think the Zoner Art Center, we are, you know, the face for Lehigh University when it comes to connecting people in the community and bringing them back onto the campus. Mm-hmm. For some people, coming to the Performing Arts Center might be their only connection to Lehigh University. So it's important for us to, you know, have the best service for them when they're here, to have world-class artistic expression on that stage, and then give them a gateway to see other things in our theater department, in our music department, in our Lehigh University Art Gallery. So that's the way we can then deepen our connection with the community.
I was going to say, Zoner's offerings are so rich and diverse, you know, from the visual to dance, music, theater, etc. I'm taken by the comment a moment ago. How does that, coming from your own experience as a performer, as a teacher, as someone in the arts, actively on stage, what's different about coming at it with that arts administrator head? What does that feel like for you, in both at Grundin and here at Zoner? How's that different?
Yeah, I, you know, being a performer, I think, gives me that perspective to understand what it's like to be in front of a live audience, to understand what it's like to get the applause from the audience, to understand how you connect with the audience and how you can have them hanging on every single note that you're singing, and then understanding the anxiety that you have to take care of your voice, take care of your instrument prior to coming onto the stage. And I think, you know, as an administrator, I understand that folks who want to perform want to do their best, and sometimes they have to get in the zone. And I think prior to me taking over, you know, before at Ocean County, I think some of the folks did not understand sometimes the mindset of a performer, mm-hmm. and I was able to help guide them to understand, like, this is why they want their water to be room temperature. You know, some of those folks that were like, no, we need to get the cold water because that's what I like. It's like, well, no, they probably want room temperature. That's what it says in their rider, and it's probably because as a singer, they don't want to have that cold water shocking their vocal cords, you know. And it's that mindset that sometimes once you understand why someone is doing something a certain way, it's because they want to give a great performance for our audience, then we're able to let that go and actually help that artist do their best and be their best.
Well, and given that, and we'll have a break coming up soon, we may come back to this, it's going to be interesting for all of us, that given that this autumn, that you can't really have that live performer live in the room with us, and yet as you'll be reaching at you. How will you be reaching out to the community virtually while we await the return of our performers?
Yeah, one of the things that we are doing right now is that I was able to reach out to the faculty, staff, and students at Lehigh University Music Theater, the Lehigh University Art Galleries. And we are going to be doing a series of short spotlight vignettes for the community where we're going to highlight the folks here and from Lehigh to be recorded and then send out to our community. So that's the thing we wanted to do. We wanted to be smart and nimble and create this virtual content and then make sure that we're able to get these folks onto our stage to perform in a safe environment with our staff and then make sure it's high quality and recording and then bring it out to our audience. And then from there, we want to continue to build and then do more for our community by bringing in other artists throughout the local area or New York City or Philadelphia, have them come up to our stage and record a longer length performance and send that out to our audience also. So that's where we want to actually end up this semester, because we know we cannot right now have a live audience in our theater itself, but we can bring that great performers on our stage to the community.
And as the students as well, because the students will be on campus this fall. Well, connecting and taking classes.
Yes, yeah. Right. We will. I think the one thing we want to be able to do is also do something to engage those students who are here, especially the freshmen who this is their first year of their college experience.
You are listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon on WDIY 88.1. We'll be right back with Zollner Arts Center Executive Director Mark Fitzgerald Wilson after this short break.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon here on WDIY 88.1. I'm your host, Kate Scuffle, and tonight I'm talking to Zollner Arts Center's new executive director, Mark Fitzgerald Wilson. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. We were talking right before the break a little bit about the bridging, the pandemic-enforced quiet in the arts community right now with virtual offerings from Zollner, serving the students and hopefully having guests in the community in the New York City area coming in and working with you. I think it's interesting that I would imagine coming out of that, there might be some new opportunities or some things that stay with the program and the exploration of working with the filming and the camera work for the students, et cetera. And I think it's interesting that a lot of us in the community, you're right, think of Zollner as a venue. You know, it might be our only connection with the university. It's somewhere we go to see great art, great performances. But I noticed you talk a lot about its role in the students' lives and what the relationship is between Zollner and the students' experience of Lehigh. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I believe that the arts is really this connective tissue to really help spark conversations with folks. And you can actually have difficult conversations through arts and arts education. And it's played an important role in my life, arts education itself. And so I want to be able to do that for the students at Lehigh. One, we are going to spotlight these students in the theater department, in the music department, give them that opportunity to perform on the stage and then be recorded. And for some of those students, it might be the first time that they've actually done a recording. Mm-hmm. And so this would be that invaluable experience for them to actually understand what it means to actually do a recorded concert for them. And that's something we might not have done before,
Right.
But now they're getting that experience, which can help them, in the future. These students are also used to using their phones and everything else to do Instagram and everything else. And so us doing this on the stage, I think, is going to be the extension for them. And hopefully they will be able to take what they learn here and then expand upon it and even do more, go beyond what we're doing with them, and even maybe do impromptu concerts on their own that's being recorded. So I think there's the opportunities for them to think beyond that. But then I think when you look at the greater Lehigh University campus, I think the arts is that place where we can, like I said, have that dialogue. And as you look at it right now with some events when it comes to talking about social justice, mm-hmm. the arts can be that way for us to have those conversations and use these hard situations to bring us together and talk about it and see it in a different kind of expression, bringing in some cultural artists that can really have that dialogue also with students. When at Ocean County College, I can say that we use the arts to help with those conversations. And one example of that is when we brought in this Muslim hip-hop dancer, Amira Sackett, from Chicago. And for many students, it was the first time they've ever had a chance to speak with a Muslim person or a Muslim woman ever. And she was able to have that dialogue with students and talk about the misconceptions of Islam and really do a Q&A with them to go more in depth with them. And I think that's what we can start to look at and exploring more of that, because we have students who come from a wide variety of places across Pennsylvania and across the country, and they may all have different backgrounds, but they might all enjoy the same kind of music. And then that's when they can find things that they do enjoy together, things they have in common, or explore new forms of art and music. Just like myself, when I was living in Germany, I heard some wonderful world music that I never heard of before, but it reminded me of some sounds I heard, and then it started to attract me to those sounds. And I think that's what's going to happen to other students too, when they hear other global music and see some other global dance forms too. They might find that very inspiring for them.
Mm. And that seems like a conversation that is also rich with possibilities for opening up to the community as well.
Yes, because I think there are things that other cultures do that we do not do, and I think we can bring some in. Mm. If you look at drum circles in both the indigenous culture and also in African drumming circles, those are things that brings community together. It's through music. It's a way for us to have that dialogue through the rhythms that we hear. We can express emotion and feel emotions through that music, so that you can have an audience of people who do not, who all speak different languages, but the shared music is that common language for the whole audience. They can actually understand the emotions behind what they're hearing. Or you can see the dancer on stage and see how they are, floating through the air. And together, we are able to visualize that and then understand what brings us and what connects us together.
It's interesting, as executive director, you're it's a lot of, you wear a lot of hats. You'll be responsible from the venue and the financing, but at the end of the day, also for the artistic vision and the overall dream of the center. It sounds like from what you're just saying, that you've thought a lot about where this could go in terms of the owner's role in the community, role with the students. What would you want to see long term? What does a blossoming next stage, next couple years of Zollner look like to you?
Well, as we try to navigate through these uncertain times, I would use that as my caveat right now. But if I was looking at a longer term vision, I always envision art as art, not just in a picture frame, not just on a stage, the place where people are. That we should have art brought to people and let them digest it in their way and then bring them along. As a classical singer, as a person who studied classical music, I know lots of folks believe that the classical music art form is the best art form, and if someone cannot sit quietly for a classical concert, then that's shame on them. And what I've seen is that the audience sometimes is dying out because we are putting these restrictions on the audience, and we want them to conform to the way we want them to digest that, you know, that entertainment, that music. And what I see is that when we allow music to grow and blossom, other art form grow and blossom, we can then expand our pie and bring in other people, you know, and that's what I would envision here also. I mean, crazy ideas that I share with the staff, but as I said, you know, you've had like those escape rooms. Could you actually imagine having music and theater where you actually would be able to move and have different experiences as you walk throughout different spaces in the Zollner Art Center? Mm-hmm. So it's not just on the Baker Hall stage, but you're moving. So if we were in this pandemic world and we knew we had to have small groups, but we wanted it to make it more like a museum or something that keeps people enjoying the arts but not stationary in one space, could we actually create small 5 minutes digestible musical performance, artistic expressions that are all connected together, where then people can move and then get a complete picture through this weaving of a storyline? Could we do something where people are walking across campus enjoying the wonderful outdoor visual arts that we have and connecting with outdoor music and also with movement and dance and having all that connect together? Could we have that with our students so that they can actually get like a New York subway feel, where there's like just arts as you're walking across campus? And I think that's where we will then kind of bring students to the arts, and we're bringing the arts to the students where they are, and then really connecting with the community. So then they can feel like, wow, here is a door that's open for me. It's already here on the campus. I can enjoy this music. I don't have to feel like I need to have permission mm-hmm. to enjoy the art. It's there for me.
That's interesting because, I agree. There's a sense that the arts can be perceived as a lead, or you need a special understanding, or you need to be smart enough, or some entree. And yet you're in the fortunate position of getting to kind of train or educate or illuminate the next generation of audience.
And, yeah, I think that's the important part. It's like, yes, there is going to be high art, and there is ways to actually bring high art and let it be digestible for other folks too, and not just to make it at a level that people think is unattainable for the masses. I think we can actually bridge that divide because I think that's where people, if art divides us, then we're in trouble. I think art is mm-hmm. there to bring us together, and I think it helps us to know that we can be next to someone that is different than us, and we can all enjoy art together. And that's the important aspect of what art can do.
And never more needed than now.
Yes.
Well, I look forward to seeing your vision come into reality on its owner. Closing thought, why do we bother? Why don't we wait out the pandemic? Why are we continuing to make art and find ways to take people through the building in small groups or make things happen outside? Why is it important at a time like this to keep the arts alive?
Inside each of us, you know, our heart beats. And as human beings, we always want to express ourselves. And even during these moments right now that we have heartache and we see pain, we want to express it. We're going to want to continue to express it. We're going to want to continue to gather together. We want to know that when we go to something, that there's someone else that's there in the audience and that's enjoying it also. It's the reason why we go to see superhero movies at Marvel, and we love it to clap together with the audience because we enjoy that communal experience. And we want that. I think we're thirsting for that. You can see people, we want to do the right thing and stay physically separated, but we also want and we need to come back together. And I think the arts can do that, and the arts can actually express that on the stage for us. It can help us understand what we're going through, and then it can also just heal us.
Beautifully put. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for joining us tonight on Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, and thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Again, I'm Kate Scuffle. I've been your host tonight for Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, and we've been speaking with Mark Fitzgerald Wilson, the new executive director of the Zollner Arts Center at Lehigh University. This is WDIY 88.1.
Next up, At the Movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of The Press.
The personal history of David Copperfield is a tribute to Charles Dickens and a nod in the title to its primary source material. That primary source material is none other than the personal history, adventures, experience, and observation of David Copperfield, the younger of Blunderstone Rookery, which he never meant to publish on any account. Published as a monthly serial in 1849 and 1850, and as a book in 1850 written by Charles Dickens. The movie, The Personal History of David Copperfield, is a mostly successful cinematic example of fan fiction, whereby a fan or fans write stories, articles, blogs, or podcasts based on an existing work of fiction. The movie, directed by Armando Iannuzzi, who directed The Death of Stalin and several episodes of TV's Veep, is co-written by Iannuzzi and Simon Blackwell, an Oscar nominee for adapted screenplay, along with Iannuzzi for In the Loop. The personal history of David Copperfield is a Valentine to Charles Dickens, all that is Dickensian, and a charming tribute to the Victorian era. The movie and story begin with the childhood of David Copperfield and follow him into his adult life. There are scenes where the adult David Copperfield, played by Dev Patel, eavesdrops on his younger self, visible to the moviegoer in the same scene but not to the character or characters in the scene. The solid supporting cast includes Mortifid Clark as Dora, Peter Capaldi as Mr. McCarver, Daisy May Cooper as Peggotty, Darren Boyd as Mr. Murdstone, Tilda Swinton as Betsy Trotwood, Hugh Laurie as Mr. Dick, Ben Whishaw as Uriah Heep, and Benedict Wong as Mr. Wickfield. The film uses intertitles or title cards with printed text on the screen, dividing the life of Copperfield into several chapters. Dev Patel, an Oscar nominee as supporting actor for Lion and known for the movies The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and Slumdog Millionaire, as Copperfield, narrates some scenes with voiceovers. The movie has the upbeat sense of the 1995 film version of Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, a BBC Masterpiece Theatre episode, and a Merchant Ivory film such as A Room with a View or Howard's End. There have been 14 adaptations of Charles Dickens' David Copperfield on screen, including silent films, TV shows, TV series, and movies. Perhaps the best known of these is the 1935 theatrical motion picture release David Copperfield, directed by George Cukor and famously starring W.C. Fields as Wilkins Micawber. The personal history of David Copperfield joins the Copperfield canon and should be enjoyed by devotees of Charles Dickens. The personal history of David Copperfield is MPAA rated PG for thematic material and brief violence. Opening September 18, The Nest, MPAA rated R. Sean Durkin directs Jude Law, Carrie Coon,
Anne Reed, and Adil Akhtar in the drama. An American entrepreneur and his family face life-changing events after they move into an English country manor. I'm Paul Wallerstein of the Lehigh Valley Press at the movies for WDIY.
Good evening and welcome to WDIY and the program On Every Main Street. This program takes a deeper look into the greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce and all of its affiliates. We're happy to have Wesley Morris with Saucon Valley Massage Therapy. Wesley, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
So this must be an interesting time for you, being a massage therapist. First of all, let us know, where are you?
We are located in Hellertown. We're called Saucon Valley Massage Therapy.
And you're open?
We are open as of June 26th.
So how do you get through something like this, this pandemic, when you have a service that requires you to be in a room with somebody? What happens? What do you think?
Initially, I believe it was March 17th when we got the orders from Governor Wolf to shut down immediately. And what happens is you go through a whirlwind of emotions, fear, anxiety, panic, you know, what's going to happen. And the first thing as a business owner that I had to do was I had to control my personal emotions. And then the second thing I had to do was let my team know that everything was going to be okay. And then, you know, just kind of go through the process of waiting, finding out as much information as possible, and waiting for the green light to open back up.
So does your team call you constantly saying, boss, when can we go back to work?
Well, what I did was I implemented a weekly Zoom call where we got together, and, you know, we just kept that camaraderie as a business. It's one thing to go through a shutdown or a national pandemic that alters your livelihood, but it's another thing to go through it alone. So we did it together, and, you know, we just supported each other. And
how do you give a safe massage now? How do you work with a person if they come in and say, you know, my back hurts?
We follow the CDC guidelines, temperature checks, taking all the precautions. Masks are worn when inside the building. People are required to sanitize their hands immediately when they walk in. There's never more than one person in the waiting room at a time, and we now allocate 30 minutes versus 15 minutes in between appointments to properly sanitize all the equipment that's used.
How do you do that?
Cleaning supplies, Clorox wipes, 60% isopropyl alcohol. I have invested in vinyl tabletops so that nothing is fabric. Everything can be wiped down sufficiently with disinfectants in between clients.
So this cost you more money to do what you normally do?
It has. It's more of an investment, but as a business owner, I look at the long haul. So I don't look just in terms of the next 3 to 6 months. I look in terms of the next 3 to 5 years. And, you know, sometimes in baseball, you're just trying to get on base.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a good analogy. So when you are with a client, you must be hearing some interesting stories.
I am. Yes, I am. You know, the general consensus that, to be transparent, the general consensus that I am receiving is that, you know, people aren't as uncomfortable with getting massage as they were, let's say, 3 to 5 months ago.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, if you look at the data in Northampton County, our numbers are down significantly, dramatically. So therefore, you know, I believe that the paranoia has, or the uneasiness has settled or subsided dramatically.
What have you learned from this? What do you reflect on? I mean, it's not over, but what advice do you have?
Well, I mean, you know, what I did during the 3.5 months that we were shut down and not allowed to operate was I renovated. I renovated the inside of my space. I learned that in business, it's important to, you know, save up for a rainy day and to, you know, keep enough liquid on hand that you can weather whatever storm kind of comes your way. Now, this was a pretty big storm, but I took advantage of it by upgrading and updating the inside of my space, and that in return has added more value to the customer and just enhanced the overall experience at Saucon Valley Massage.
So tell us about Saucon Valley Massage. What type of treatment do you give your clients?
You know, we really put a really high emphasis on customer experience and quality massage therapy. And we do that by developing a relationship with our customers and really getting to know what they need and provide that from a therapist standpoint. And we just are continually striving to get a little bit better every single day.
How many therapists do you have?
Currently six.
Do they each have their own clientele, or are they accepting new clientele? What can you tell us about if somebody wants to become a client?
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things that I have implemented in our culture is that there's no superstars at Saucon Valley Massage. And I have hired in a way that you can walk through the door and you're getting the best massage that we could possibly give by any of our service providers, doesn't matter who you go. So to answer your question of do they have their own clients, no. Saucon Valley Massage clients, they can go to anybody.
This is a chamber show on every main street. What types of things does the chamber help you out with?
The chamber, specifically Jess O'Donnell, has been absolutely phenomenal throughout this entire thing. They have kept in contact with me, and in the beginning of this, I wasn't even a chamber member. I was just an affiliate of Jess O'Donnell, and I have received a $500 grant from the Chamber of Commerce in the beginning of this thing. And then the Chamber also partnered with Northampton County to make sure that the second round of grants went to the people that needed them, which I have received a grant through that process as well. They have just been tremendous.
How important have these grants been?
Oh, significant. Significantly. When you have no revenue coming in for 3.5 months, and it took 3.5 months to receive unemployment, any sort of financial benefits were greatly appreciated.
I'll bet. I think we can all say that. Wes Morris from Saucon Valley Massage Therapy. Once again, Wes, why don't you remind us where you're located?
Saucon Valley Massage Therapy, located at 628 Main Street in Hellertown. It's a family-owned business. I took over the business about 3.5 years ago from my mother, who had it for years and years before me. We have been the official massage therapist for the Philadelphia Eagles. We have Olympic caliber athletes that we see, and we have clients all across the board.
And your website for an appointment?
SauconValleyMassage.com.
Wes, great to talk with you, and welcome back to business.
Hey, I appreciate it, Greg. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to On Every Main Street on WDIY 88.1.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
You're listening to On Every Main Street on WDIY 88.1. With Andy Lee of Braveheart Highland Pub in Hellertown. Andy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Welcome back to business. As you know, this is On Every Main Street. We're talking about businesses, how they initially dealt with the pandemic and where they are right now. Andy, what happened when, let's say, middle of March?
Yeah, actually, couldn't have happened at a worse time for us. I mean, Braveheart, our biggest day of the year is St. Patty's Day.
Sure.
So we were told to shut down on March 15th.
Ouch.
And, so we had already bought all our product, bought all of our beverages, and we basically lost all of that simply because we couldn't open. So it was a tough time for us. We normally do in one day what we do in a week on St. Patrick's Day. So it wasn't a good start to this whole pandemic thing for us, for sure.
How many locations do you have?
I have one, have Braveheart, and then I had Taps Tavern as well, and on Route 378 in Bethlehem. And we closed that permanently. And that was also a bad time. And March Madness was right around the corner. We had a lot of things ready to go. And for that place was much more of a sports-oriented bar, restaurant. And so we closed that March 15th, and we never reopened.
And I can tell you the folks from the Bethlehem Rotary Club felt that one.
Yes. It was a regular place for them.
That's the place where we welcome new members and have a chat about things other than Rotary and get to know each other better. So
we're
sorry to see that happen, but you've still got Braveheart, Highland Pub. So people know, what is your address?
Our Braveheart's at 430 Main Street in Hellertown. We've been there for, I bought that building, it'll be 14 years in November, actually. So that's been and I own that building. So that was one of the major differences between both places. I didn't own the restaurant at Taps.
So this hits and you close down, right?
Yes.
And how long are you closed for?
You mean at Taps? Permanent.
But at Braveheart.
Braveheart, now we're reopened. I mean, we're limited capacity. We can only do 25% inside. Just the governor just passed a new ordinance yesterday that by September 21st we can go to 50%. But there's a lot of vague things in that passing of that. So there's still a lot of unknowns. But, yeah, we've been opened. I mean, we reopened after we were shut down early in March. We could do takeout from March to middle of May, latter part of May, and then we could do outdoor dining from May. And then in July, they allowed us indoor dining, but it was limited capacity, and then they shut it back down to 25%. So
how do you adapt outdoor dining? How do you do this?
Well, in my case, I ended up adding I put a $50,000 covered deck on to which would allow us to accommodate to about 30 people on that deck. So we built that deck in 11 days just to try to accommodate. And I was pretty much aware that the first thing they were going to do is make us go outdoors. And we had some outdoors dining, but not enough. So that's fortunately been a godsend for us. It's paid off in dividends right now. So our biggest fear, like most restaurants, is what's going to happen when the cold weather comes. Because, you know, if we're not allowed to go to full capacity or even where people can sit and have a drink, it's going to get very challenging.
So I understand you practice safe measures as safe as you can be in this situation. Make our listeners feel comfortable about coming to Braveheart.
Well, I mean, obviously, there's certain criteria that we have to adhere to. So, obviously, the first thing is everybody's got to wear masks. When you enter the building, you got to wear masks. All my employees have to wear masks. We sanitize every table. Once you come to the table, before you get the table, when you leave the table, we don't leave any things, any condiments on the table, anything of that nature, we don't leave there because we try to keep it as sterile as possible. We've got dividers that we'll put up at the bar if and when we're ready to go and do that. We have hand sanitizer machines in every bathroom. We have them at every corner and every step throughout the whole restaurant. So, we clean the building thoroughly every single night. I have a cleaner that comes in every morning. And so we do as much as we can. You know, our job is to try to mitigate the risk as much as we possibly can within the ability of what's out there for us to use. So, you know, we keep 6 feet apart, you know, the social distancing, all of that stuff. Fortunately, Braveheart has 3 levels, so we can put people upstairs, downstairs, and even above on the second floor to make sure people are adequately spaced, which a lot of places don't have that capability. So that's one of the features that we have that most other places wouldn't be able to have. So we can get 25 people upstairs on our second story. We can get at 50% capacity. We can get 60 people on the main floor, and we can get 25 down in our lowland pub. So theoretically, at that point, we could get over 100 people that would be adequately spaced. You wouldn't even see half the people.
So what I'm hearing is this is as safe as you can be.
Exactly. Exactly. That's our hope. And every one of my employees wears masks. They get their temperature gets checked every day they come in. We have to log it. If anybody's noticed that they're sick, they have to notify us right away. I mean, we're trying to do everything we possibly can do.
So, Andy, if I'm a new customer to Braveheart, what do you recommend?
Well, if you're into the Scottish fare, which if you're going to come to Braveheart, the first thing you should try is our Scottish sampler, which is a bridie, which is a pastry with beef inside. Then we've got a meat pie, which is another pastry. It looks like a hockey puck, all kind of, and it's got sausage inside. And then we have bangers, which is another sausage with mashed potatoes and peas. You will not be hungry if you eat that. I don't know many people that can eat the whole thing.
Being inside is certainly going to pose some different concerns for people when they think about going out. And this is something about cold weather that we just have to learn to deal with. Do you think people will ultimately get comfortable with this?
I hope. I mean, you know, I think what I've tried to say to people, you know, I made my career in insurance long before I was in the restaurant business. And I mean, we all take risks every single day. I mean, you drive a car, you take a risk. You fly in a plane, you take a risk. You go to a baseball game, you sit in the stands, you take a risk. We have to, as individuals, decide what type of risk we're willing to take and at what level which we're going to take that risk. Again, my job is to try to mitigate it as much as possible. I don't think that we'll get back to 100% for quite a while, because there are certain people that just don't feel comfortable taking that risk, and that's their prerogative. The challenge for us is just, again, make sure we mitigate it. But, you know, every business is our business, the hospitality business, is struggling immensely throughout this whole time, which I think has been one of the frustrating things for us. You know, you can go to a Home Depot where they get more people on a weekend than we get in a month, and their policies and procedures are nothing like what we're being forced to take. And we're being scrutinized as if we were the main culprit for this spread, which has been very disheartening. And I mean, other states are being way ahead of Pennsylvania when it comes to this. I mean, I'm from New England originally. Rhode Island's at 75% capacity. You can sit at a bar. Connecticut's at 50%. You can sit at a bar. I mean, they've been that way for over 2.5 months. So we're finally getting to 50. And there's still a lot of unanswered questions what we can do. So I think people are going to have to make that opinion for themselves.
Andy, if people feel comfortable, and I'm sure that people are feeling much more comfortable about going out, they should try Braveheart Highland Pub, or if you're a fan, and they're open. And once again, why don't we wind up with, give us the address, and if somebody wants to check out your offerings, you have a website. Why don't you give us some information there?
Yeah, so it's Braveheart Highland Pub, located at 430 Main Street, Hellertown, PA. And you can go to BraveheartHighlandPub.com, and you can check out our website. And everything is on the website, our menu, our pricing, so on and so forth.
Good luck, Andy. We'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you for the call.
You bet. You're listening to On Every Main Street on WDIY 88.1.
Are you interested in inspiring and informing future generations through WDIY's programming? A gift through your will, retirement plan, or estate plan is a wonderful legacy to leave to those that will need a trusted place to hear what's going on in the world. For information about naming WDIY as a beneficiary, please call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org/legacy.
Welcome to Ricky Gower with BB&T, now Truist Bank. Ricky, first of all, just an overview. How many branches do you have and where are you?
I am a retail area leader for our Delaware Valley, Lehigh Valley region, and I support 22 branches throughout the Lehigh Valley in Northampton County, Lehigh County, and also up into northeastern Pennsylvania, which is most of our branches in the greater Lehigh Valley area.
Ricky, COVID-19 has posed some very interesting situations for bankers like you, especially those who know the retail sector. How you doing?
We're doing well. It's been a very interesting almost last 6 months right now. And, you know, I think that we've, you know, our leadership at the regional level, at the local level, and also at the company level has never steered away from keeping the safety of our teammates, the safety of our clients as number one priority. And so that has kind of been our guiding light over these last 6 months. And we found a lot of ways to continue to do business, to continue to help our clients, you know, in many alternative methods. And we've been doing really well by doing so.
Take me back 6 months. It's the middle of March. Everything's getting closed down. How do you get your team together, and what do you do? How do you start a process that you've never gone through?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we felt like we've been flying the airplane as we're building it along the way, and so, you know, I think that the key has been for us has been communication, leadership, you know, throughout our team on a daily basis. You know, if we turn the clock back, like you said, into March, we've put a lot of processes and procedures in place to be able to continue. We've operated all along as being an essential business, and so we've communicated a lot. We've put a lot of protocol in place to continue to do what we need to do to be there for our clients. Technology has been huge. We've been forced, and our clients and our communities have been forced to rely so much on technology now more than ever, and it's really, I think, opened the eyes of many of us and many of our community that we can continue to do things and help our clients through many avenues of technology.
The PPP loans, almost everybody who's in business applied for one of these. How do you deal with the volume?
You know, that's been an amazing process, Greg. You know, I've been very closely involved, you know, at least for the first, you know, in the beginning of April, through probably early summer. BB&T, now Truist, we've been one of the top PPP lenders in the country in terms of volume of dollars in PPP loans that we've made, in terms of the amount of businesses that we've been able to help, and jobs that we've been able to save, and quite frankly, families that we've been able to help. It was a huge, humongous undertaking. Just like I mentioned earlier about everyone learning along the way and, you know, being flexible, we've been learning along the way and as things have changed so many times throughout the process. But I go back to, you know, the communication piece internally, the expertise that we've had on our teammates at all levels of the company, carrying that communication to our clients. And, you know, we've really done a great job overall in helping so many throughout the Lehigh Valley.
What is there about banking during a pandemic that we might think about as your average radio listener?
What is it about banking that, I'm sorry, Greg, can you please mention,
sure,
say that again?
Sure. What is there about banking and your job and the jobs of you and your team members that we might not think about? Because we go to the bank, we give you our money, we give you a check, and we write checks, and we invest, you know, in your services. What is there that, what, put it this way, what have you learned?
I think we've learned a lot. We've learned that we can be extremely flexible. We can adapt at a moment's notice. We've learned that our the level of teamwork that we've exhibited probably in my career, which is about, you know, almost 18 years, I've never seen the level of commitment and teamwork that has been exhibited by our team over these last 6 months, and all in the spirit of being there for our clients, helping our clients along the way, because client needs have not changed throughout these last 6 months. Our clients still need a variety of services and products that we have to offer, and we've continued to be able to offer them throughout these last 6 months, probably even in a better way than we've ever have in the past. And so We've learned the necessity and the benefits of technology, and we've learned on what it means to pivot or to make edits at a moment's notice.
Do you have before and after conversations? For example, when a vaccine arrives, we can do this. Talk about life after the, you know, banking life after the pandemic.
Life after the pandemic, I mean, I think that, like I mentioned earlier, I think we've proved to ourselves that we can do a lot of things virtually. And I know that doesn't take the place of face-to-face contact. And I do believe that eventually, you know, that we'll resume banking as it was pre-COVID. I personally believe that. You know, when, that's a tough question to answer at this moment.
But you do envision a day when we can go back into the lobby of a bank?
Absolutely. And you know, right now, at the present time, we are letting clients in our lobbies. It's a controlled access. You know, we started the process back in June where we allowed one client in the branch at a time by appointment only. Now we are functioning in an environment where we're allowing a one-to-one ratio. So if we have, you know, let's say five teammates inside a branch, we can allow five clients in the branch with controlled access. But, you know, our plans within the company at, you know, do allow and at some point for us to resume normal operating.
Ricky, anything else you'd like us to know about BB&T Truist website? How do we get up to date on what's going on?
A lot of our updates are on our bbt.com website or truist.com. And, you know, one of the things, you know, with Truist and our merger of equals that we are in the midst of right now is, you know, this pandemic has been an unbelievable springboard to the brand of Truist and our new our culture. No one could have scripted, obviously no one could have scripted the last 6 months, and no one planned for it and no one expected it, but there's been a lot of silver linings out there, and you know, one of them is the Truist brand and our capabilities, that what we're able to do and what we will be able to do as a new company as we move forward. I think both organizations, BB&T and SunTrust, are high quality financial institutions, but I think it will only be better together as Truist. Our capabilities, what we can do, how we can do it, the speed at which we can do it, the technology level will be second to none.
Good note to end on, Ricky. Ricky Gower with BB&T, now Truist, open for business. Thank you very much, Ricky.
Greg, thanks so much.
Up next on WDIY 88.1 FM, news headlines from NPR, followed by our Monday night folk program, Folk Classics.